Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
Well, it's a good thing that Jim Omohundro brought the accurate real-time information, gentlemen, because, I just made an assumption and I was dead wrong. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Damian Anderson. See, now, the absence of Ron Wolfley, I thought last week's podcast, just like Patrick Peterson against Calvin Johnson, was sort of a measuring stick broadcast of Cardinals Underground, if you will, on azcardinals.com, all brought to you by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram, hence... That is why Ron Wolfley is not with us today. But I am informed otherwise, Damian, that apparently, this happens time to time in the holiday season. Wolf, as we know, is a backup mall Santa. Sort of like being a substitute teacher. At any given moment, he is in need, and apparently he is at a mall in the Valley somewhere taking Christmas wishes and making his list and checking it twice.
Well, Wolf is a man of many talents and whatever it takes to pay the bills. You know what I mean? And as they say in this game of football, the more you can do.
As they say at the mall, he fits the suit. So they bring him in. He's doing double duty today, Darren. So I hope you guys are ready.
He didn't
to
even
bring
need
the...
any padding, Paul.
You're right. No exactly. Padding. They say, they have to run on a budget. They can't make these extra expenditures for extra padding every year. Hence, Wolf comes in and just slides right into the Santa suit jacket.
He's starting to get some of the gray hair, too, the white hair.
Oh, wow. Nice. Well, you know what? That's only fitting, considering I missed a couple of weeks ago, and it was a Pauly beatdown. It was like a party wave. Everyone just jumped in on it. So, why not? Everyone take a shot at Wolf. He's not here. All right, so we look at this game, and I just like to give props to the Cardinals myself. Married to someone from Michigan who has a loudmouth brother, my brother-in-law, so at least I got to go home Sunday night and not have to hear the wrath and any of the trash talking in Casa Calvisi because the Lions did lose 38-10. And Darren, I think I saw your holy cannoli stat. We went from 58-0 on one end to 38-10 on the other end.
Yes.
And that does make for some sort of statistical happening, correct?
Yes, that margin, that swing margin of 86 points, I was thinking about it after the game. I'm like, that has to be pretty significant. I don't know if too many teams have gone through that. And actually, this was confirmed by Elias that it's actually the biggest swing between weeks since I'm trying to remember the team now. I'm drawing a blank.
It was 68, I believe.
It was 1968, and it was 88 points, and it was just – it was to have a two-week swing of 86 points, I mean, I just think it's amazing, and it kind of shows the kind of season this team has had for it to have its biggest blowout win after one of the biggest blowout losses ever for any team.
So if you're going to understand that, probably only the players understand that. As a former player, Damian, any theories on how you go week to week like that?
I mean, just when you have inconsistency at certain positions, there's going to be a peak and valley. And I think that's what you see, what we've seen from the week to week in Seattle and then here last week. I mean, I think that we've always known that this team is predicated on defense, and we got a little love. They set up great field position for the offense, and what was good to see is the offense capitalized and scored touchdowns this week.
Of course, Seattle went on the road, put another 50 burger on the board, right? So, I mean, Seattle's absolutely rolling right now. Other takeaways, what do you guys, you came away from the win over the Lions, and what was first and foremost, other than pondering the mysteries of some of these stats, Darren, on your drive home, what else were you thinking about after this game?
I mean, in all honesty, Paul, I mean, the one of the first things I thought two things. One, number one, it reminded me so much of that win over Denver in 2010. When the Cardinals won 43-13, the day Jay Feely scored every point known to man.
That's
until
right,
Tim
yeah.
Hightower got hot late and had almost 200 yards rushing himself. It reminded me of that game because that was an offense that didn't do much. It was John Skelton at quarterback, then a rookie, not passing the ball very well. But it was complete defensive domination, and they rolled in a season where not a whole lot else went right. That was one of the things that reminded me of was that game itself. The other thing was, is quite frankly, this game was a microcosm of this season for this team. You know, normally the Cardinals haven't gotten two pick sixes in a game or had, you know, been able to set up a couple of touchdown drives of 5 yards or less, which is what ended up happening. But ultimately, you know, aside from the score, this was what? It was a game the Cardinals dominated on defense and struggled big time offensively to put anything together on a consistent basis. Just like every other game, I think they just happened to have some of the pieces go right. Again, with the returns for touchdowns, with a muff fumble, a muffed punt fumble that they recovered at the 5, and another interception they returned to the 3, which, you know, no matter how bad your offense is going, you would hope they'd be able to convert those, and that's what happened to go on this weekend.
Damian, what do you think? What else? We talked at halftime. By the end of the game, what were you thinking?
I mean, for me, it was just I think once I just was able to look and look at everything that they were able to do. When you look at some good quarterback they've faced this year in terms of Stafford, you look at Ryan and you look at Brady, and I mean when they play well, they minimize these good quarterbacks in terms of their QBR ratings, and that's just the defense playing well, being opportunistic, getting turnovers. But to me, that I think was going to be the foundation of this team, and I knew that coming in that they were going to respond well. Obviously, the offense, as Darren mentioned, being able to capitalize in those red zone. Yes, it was 5 yards, but you still have to be able to score. We haven't had a scoring touchdown, which seemed like weeks, you know, months. It was just a buildup. I mean, we still haven't had a passing touchdown, it seems, since Green Bay, Darren, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So, I mean, to me, it was just the team's ability to respond. Yes, there's some areas that need to improve, but overall, as we talked about, Paulie, at halftime, it was a defense just of domination of the Detroit Lions this past week.
You know, it's making the opposing quarterback not only look bad, but look almost historically bad or season worst. I know after the game, Stafford had a quote. He said, "That's about as bad as it gets for me." And you know what? We crunched the numbers the next morning. That was his lowest QB rating of the season, 37 and change. You have to go back to his rookie year to find a quarterback rating lower than that, and only twice before. And, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. If you look at the quarterback ratings on a lot of the opposing QBs that the Cardinals have gone against, I mean, they've had miserable games according to that formula. Even Russell Wilson, for the 58-0 final, his QB rating was 88. Well, look at the games coming into that game. He went 127 against Minnesota. He went 131 against the Jets. He went 126 against Miami, 105 against Chicago's defense. And then this past week against Buffalo, he went 104. So how telling do you guys consider that? How much of a gauge do you think that is of a defense overall based on what they do to the opposing quarterback, considering it's a quarterback-driven league?
Well, I mean, I think it says a lot for this team, you know, to be up among the league leaders defensively in terms of quarterback rating against and in terms of passing completion against. I think that's important. But again, I think some of that is a natural – well, not, I shouldn't say a natural, because obviously it's because the defenses work so hard to get to that point. But, I mean, unfortunately, it hasn't produced – enough wins, because you don't have the other side of the equation. I mean, your defense can only do so much most of the time. And, you know, this weekend they happened to dominate to the point where they were providing scores, and then on the flip side, providing even easier scores for the offense. But most of the time, it's not going to be like that. They're just going to stop the other team, and that's why you need your offense there. And I think if you quite frankly put a normal and average offensive type season on this team right now, you obviously have more wins, because I think defensively they've done enough of a job on the passing game in a passing league to win ball games more than they have.
They had what, a year ago they had 10 interceptions.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was a big time point of emphasis in the offseason. Then they now have 22 to lead the NFL in what, 13 in the last 5 games. Any reason why, Damian? I don't know. I mean, what do you attribute it to, if anything?
I think it's just overall understanding of the defensive backs, just knowing their responsibilities, multiple disguising of coverages, pressures. I think we've seen throughout this defense that they bring pressure from the quarterback position to the safety position, and they're able to get pressure on the cornerback. And I think what also happens when the defense, as we've seen the games of late, or this past game, they were able to score points, and then the opposing offense feels pressure. They need to make a big play. They need to make something happen, as that play that we saw with Greg Toler's interception. Stafford was just trying to squeeze it in there and just threw a bad ball. Toler made a good athletic play, and it was a pick six. The rest is history. And I mean, it was almost like a 14-point swing with that touchdown, because they were in the red zone. So I think that's what enabling this defense to do well is the multiple pressures, quarterbacks trying to make things happen. And they really did. I think there's so many different looks that they give them in terms of Coach Ray Horton that they don't really know where to go with the football. And then the defense obviously knows, and they capitalize on it, and hence the, as you mentioned, the big upswing in terms of turnovers.
And I would think I'd put this on, you know, whatever it is, whether it's knowing the defense a little bit better or Horton's schemes in the first place. But I mean, there have been some horrific decisions made by these other quarterbacks, and I don't think that's that. I think that does have something to do with his defense. But I mean, again, we unfortunately have seen some bad decisions made by Cardinal quarterbacks throwing interceptions. But there's been clearly, I mean, I think of that first throw by Mark Sanchez just lofting it down the middle with pressure up in the middle. There was at least one or two from Stafford where I'm like, why is he doing that? Now, it very well could be because of the confusion, and I'm assuming that's part of what it is. I mean, I think these guys are getting confused to the point where they're just hoping and praying. I don't understand it. I mean, you really, if you're a quarterback in that situation, you need to be taking the sack and living to fight another day. But, I mean, obviously the Cardinals will take it.
You know, I think it was Rashad Johnson in our post-game radio interview on the Cardinals radio network. He just said, yeah, his interception, like, wow, I can't believe he's throwing this, and then he broke on the ball. And but I'm impressed by how many times, if accurate, if they're telling the truth, that Cardinals DBs have baited quarterbacks in interceptions and that they've known what is coming. I mean, Kerry Rhodes has said it repeatedly. Patrick Peterson has said it. Rashad Johnson, you know, guys have said, yeah, we recognize that play. We really knew what was coming. So I don't know if it's a byproduct of increased film work or better film study, note-taking. I'm not exactly sure. Do you guys consider that, or did anybody talk about perhaps that was the best game of the Cardinals defense all season?
Well, I know Calais Campbell said that to me. I just gave him a general question after the game about, you know, wanting to help out the offense. And he said, you know, I think that's the game that we've talked about having all season. We kind of finally all did it. Now, he clarified that and said there were still a couple things that they'd like to have back. And, you know, let's not get it wrong here, too. I mean, a lot happened right before that, right around that time of Toler's 102-yard return. I mean, the Lions threw a touchdown pass on a play that they get called for delay of game, but nobody thought it was delay of game. The defense played that ball out, and he caught a touchdown, and it would have been 24-17. The Lions, even after the game, insisted that they felt like they got the playoff.
Let me tell you, I was, because Dave Pasch had identified it, 2-1. Yeah. I was looking at the play clock. They did not get that off.
And that's very possible. That's very – and they got called for the penalty. But if that stands – instead of then the next play, Greg Toler getting, or two plays later, whenever it was, Greg Toler gets the pick and taking it back 102 yards, you know, and all of a sudden it's a 7-point game instead of a 21-point game with a lot of time left and an offense that, again, at that point was not doing anything for the Cardinals. You know, a lot can change. So defensively, it was close there because they let them drive on that one. But for the most part, I don't know how you can argue about 10 points. I don't know how you can argue about, you know, scoring 14 and setting up an easy touchdown with another one. I mean, they did what they needed to do. You know, Patrick Peterson was very good when he had his chances on Calvin Johnson. You know, really, I mean, considering where that defense was the week before and how poorly they played against Seattle, because everybody played poorly in the Seattle game, I thought they bounced back incredibly well.
All right, so speaking of the offense, less than 200 yards total offense. But Ryan Lindley becomes the 8th rookie quarterback to win a game this season. That's quite a stat in the NFL, 2012. There's no doubt about that. And here's the thing. Did he win the game? Absolutely not. But he didn't lose the game. And honestly, to me, if you had zoomed out in the entire season, when the Cardinals get a performance from the quarterback, no matter who it is, any of the three guys, that doesn't lose the game, then they end up winning the game. Does that make sense? Does that make sense on any level? If you just get a satisfactory average performance out of your quarterback, one interception instead of, you know, 3 or 4, instead of him going back to the house, then all of a sudden the Cardinals are right there and in serious contention for a W.
No, absolutely, Paul. And Darren and I talked about this at the beginning of the season when Kevin Cobb was doing such a good job. And it wasn't that he was playing spectacular football. It was the fact that he wasn't turning the ball over and he was managing the game, as quote-unquote we would say. However, I think more times than not, if you look at this defense, how many times are they going to get pick sixes? How many times are they going to get the ball for an interception or a turnover on the 5-yard line? There needs to be balance on a football team. And I think consistently for this team to win, you're going to need to see balance on that offensive side. Yeah, you're going to need to see plays in the special teams, but that's more of a team effort. You're going to need to see a quarterback play, some type of moving the ball, some type of first downs, assisting the defense instead of allowing to feel like, oh, they have to go out there and score 14 points on defense for us to win a football game. Because as we've seen, if that's been the case throughout the year, it hasn't bode well for this Arizona Cardinal football team.
All right, so as a former running back in this league, right back at you, what did we see out of Beanie Wells? 3 touchdowns, 67 yards, had the 31-yard scamper at the end that reached the end zone. What'd you think?
I thought he ran fast. He looked healthy, and I think that was the thing that jumped out at me. I mean, he ran with downhill like he wanted it, and I think that was the most impressive part for me. And obviously on his 31-yard touchdown, he looked for him to be able to get around, make a good read, get around the edge, and turn the afterburners on. And I heard a couple guys after just a couple comments, where'd that speed come from, referring to Beanie. But I just think that he's been a guy that's been stake bit, but I think that everyone knows what he's capable of when he's healthy.
All right, so 'tis the season, Darren, the end of the season. You're not going to the postseason.
Yes.
Where everyone speculates about players' futures and their roles on the team going forward. Beanie Wells, fill in the blank. What do you think? What do we know?
Well, I mean,
look into the crystal football.
I don't think anything is guaranteed for 2013, and I think even Beanie knows that. I mean, he's mentioned a couple times down the stretch before last week about why it's important for everybody to play hard because you're playing for a job, whether it was here or somewhere else. You know, as of right now, I don't see him going. I mean, there's a lot in flux. Larod Stevens-Hallings is an unrestricted free agent. You got Brian Williams coming off his second major injury. I mean, Beanie is under contract for next year, so you're not going to just cut him loose just for the hell of it. You know, so do I see a 2013 with Beanie Wells here? Absolutely. Do I see one without him? Yeah, I probably could, depending on what happens. So I think there'll be a lot judged on maybe less on what Beanie does these last couple of games and more about, you know, what this team does in the offseason, who's in charge, what kind of direction they might go, if a different direction. But, you know, I think Beanie's very aware of what he's been through and what he has and hasn't done, and he wants to make sure somebody wants him next year.
I see it similar to Kevin Cobb in that, you know, you're going to bring him back most likely. Now, with Cobb, you actually, you know, yeah, have the renegotiation issue, which, you know, okay. But ultimately, when you start camp, I think you'll be with the team. It's just that you're going to have someone else. There's going to have to be a real viable contingency plan, you know, just based on the track history of not being able to stay on the field for whatever reason between both guys. You're going to have a real bona fide backup plan of some sort. So to me, they're almost like the same player at different positions, same situation. Would you agree with that, Damian?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, if you look at just the depth at the running back position, all three guys from the, I guess, initial Beanie Wells, Ryan Williams, as well as Larod Stevens-Howling, those guys have all had injury issues, you know, and that's something that I'm sure the pro personnel staff will address, I mean, come this offseason. Granted, in a perfect world, you would think that those guys would be healthy. You could count on them and go out in the year. However, history dictates one thing else, and I think that moving forward, I mean, they'll look to see what's available in the draft and potentially in free agency to address some of those concerns.
All right, so on the sideline, I'm constantly staying out of the way of the specialists, you know, your punters, your kickers, your long snappers, that kind of thing. So let's name some names here and then test Darren over there. So Jay Feely's made how many in a row now? After he had 19 in a row earlier this season. I think he's back up to 10, I believe.
That sounds about right. I can't say that I've...
And since he readily admits on the air that he spits in the face of superstition, I have no problem mentioning that. But we'll also mention
Dave
Zaslav.
He's not getting fined for that, is he?
What's that?
He's not getting fined for that, is he?
No. No. Nothing to do with violations of expectorations or anything. No.
Hint, hint.
Dave Zastadil, 6 punts inside the 20, and he's on the verge of some sort of record that Ben Graham tied a couple years ago, right?
Yeah. Dave Zastadil is on pace to break Graham's 42 punts down inside the 10, which or 20, which is an incredible number. He's actually behind Dustin Colquitt of Kansas City, who's got, I think, 41 already. And the NFL record is 42 that Graham had. And Andy Lee's got from the 49ers. And there was one other man in there that I'm drawing a blank on who it is. But, I mean, both those guys, well, I shouldn't say probably pass it because, you know, punting inside the 20 is oftentimes, you know, a crapshoot of whether the punter is even in a position to do it in the first place. But Dave Zastadil's had a fantastic season. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. You know, a lot of people were upset when he was brought in and they let Ben Graham go last year. And I got that. You know, Ben was coming off a not as great year in 2010 that he had in 2009. But I think Dave Zastadil's proven now that he's been healthy a whole year, what he can do punting the ball. I mean, he kicks it long. I mean, he got a fair catch. Now, some of this is his gunners, but he got a fair catch of, what, 56 yards, 54-yard punt that was fair caught. I mean, if you could end up doing that, that's impressive, getting that much distance and that much hang time. And I think he's, you know, is he going to make the Pro Bowl? No, he's probably not going to make the Pro Bowl because there's a lot of really excellent punters out there these days. But he deserves to be in the conversation, in my opinion.
Damian, when you saw or maybe heard, since you were doing the post-game show, Adrian Wilson get emotional at the podium during his press conference, you know, you go back to your playing days with A-Dub. You know, what'd you think? How'd you react to that?
I mean, I just had to put myself in his shoes and knowing how hard he's worked since he's got here. I mean, I remember a tall, skinny kid, 205 pounds from North Carolina State, and just how hard he's worked. I mean, he's just been quiet, humbled, and I know Darren has spent some time with him and going back when to his high school when they retired his number. But just from him, he and I, our lockers being close together, training together, being on punt block together, punt return, and just smiling like, who's going to go get this punt? And it was more times than not, it was him going to block the punt.
You were in the video too. Really? The jumping video, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really? Yeah, the 66 inches or whatever? Yeah. You were holding the bar
and the funny thing about it, I did it right before he did, but he's a dub.
No, they weren't rolling.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Me too, actually.
I mean, it's just great. I mean, just to see the culmination of his career, see how hard he's worked, and I mean, it's understood that all good things have come to an end, and I'm not trying to foreshadow anything, but I mean, much respect to A-Dub and everything that he's accomplished. I mean, this game getting the 25-25. I mean, he's amongst elite company because he's an elite individual, and I mean, he carries himself because he wants to be the best. And I mean, I think he's done a lot for this Arizona Cardinals organization.
You know, I agree. I mean, obviously, you like Damian, I've spent a long time around Adrian. I've been covering this team since the day he was drafted. You know, and he's frustrated right now. I mean, he's clearly frustrated because, as everybody, as all of these guys do, they want to go out on their own terms. And, you know, there is a good chance that he's not going to go out on the terms that he wanted here. And I shouldn't say good. I don't know what's going to happen. And you know, having talked to him, I mean, he's made it clear no one said that, but you know, he kind of sees writing on the wall and where it's going. And you know, it's too bad because you always want the storybook finale. Everybody wants it, and I know he does, and I think a lot of us that like Adrian that have known him, we would all love the storybook ending too. But that might not just be possible. So for him to get to that level, the 25-25 club, you know, I think clearly the emotion of the moment hit him. You're not only getting to that level, but what it meant, when it happened, everything else that's going on. You know, I made comment on this in my blog post. You know, he said something after the game. He goes, not a lot of people know this, but I'm a pretty emotional guy, which is probably true because most people just don't know Adrian, but any of us who have spent any kind of time around him know he's totally emotional. I think that's one of the reasons I like him so much, is because he wears it on his sleeve. He will get teary and not apologize for it if the calls for it. There are times when he gets really, really angry and, you know, he may not talk to, let's say, me, and I want to talk to him. But I always know where I stand with him. I think everybody always knows where they stand with Adrian because he lets you know most of the time. And if he doesn't say where you are, you can tell by his body language or how he's reacting to it.
Definitely.
But it takes you a while to figure that out as a media member. Hence, a lot of media members are very intimidated
by
number 24.
Well, I'd be intimidated too. He's a large individual that could pound you into dust. But I mean,
but even he admits at times, he's like, which Adrian? I mean, there are different Adrians in different modes and different moods.
I did a story once upon a time of the many faces of Adrian Wilson, and I did exactly that and talked to guys in the locker room because even he'll admit it. He know. He's got kind of a multi personality thing going on sometimes, but you know what, he's been an excellent player for this team, and no matter what ends up happening, he's created an excellent legacy here.
He's one of those guys that just garners so much respect among his peers, and I got evidence of that at the very end. There's a little sideline slice of the sideline, guys, at the very end of the game was no longer in doubt. He had his 25-25 sacks and interceptions, sixth player in history, and there were coaches on the sideline, you know, say, hey, can we get that on the scoreboard? You know, they're talking to some of the Cardinals officials because that's the level of respect. They wanted him to be honored in front of the home fans. You know, perhaps this might be his final home game as a Cardinal. You never know what's next coming up against the Bears. So it's that sort of thing. And then when you see Charlie Trippi in attendance and they rededicate his number in the Ring of Honor, I mean, you can't help but wonder there, Damian, .. Is 24 going up there and Adrian Wilson at some point? But that's for another podcast. Yes. Let me ask you about this. The game against the Bears, a team that has been reeling, that is taking a ton of criticism. The players are firing back. The two linebackers are taking it out on the fans and the media, in quotes, in print. What do you expect from the Bears on Sunday? And how much do you guys think the Cardinals relish this spoiler role?
Well, I think that the Bears are going to try and respond because, as you mentioned, they're worried about the fans and the media rather than winning football games. But they're going to play tough. And, I mean, I think that you know with the Bears what you're going to get. They're a pretty tough defense. Offensively, they got some playmakers. However, they haven't been able to make things happen as of late. And I think with the defense coming off that momentum of last week's game, similar type situation. I mean, you have a pretty good quarterback, an awesome receiver in Brandon Marshall and Jay Cutler, that combination. I foresee the same thing type happening. I mean, hopefully some turnovers create some opportunities for the offense, and defense has a good day.
I think Damian hit it on the head. I see this Bears offense almost exactly like the Lions. They got a little bit better of a running back in Matt Forte, for sure. But they've got one main receiver. They got a quarterback who is ultra physically talented, who doesn't always make the best decisions, which I see in both Stafford and Cutler. And I think there's a chance to confuse them. And I think having to come all the way out here with reeling a little bit, I think there's some opportunities there. And even their defense is better than the Lions, but their defense is also banged up significantly right now. You hope to take advantage. The thing that worries me there is the Bears do have the chance to create more turnovers. And, you know, Ryan Lindley has not been great, but at least he's been managing how many times he's turned the ball over. Let's see if that can continue and see if they can get something going on the ground. Because, again, you can't count on multiple touchdowns from your defense.
Bears O-line, though, might be worse. Bears O-line might be more prone to letting pressure on Jay Cutler.
I don't think there's any question about that.
The food court. You know, if Wolf isn't at the Santa station at the mall, then just check the food court. Just to anybody who's out there and about and, you know, you wonder.
Beard off, everything.
Right. There's a two-hour line for Santa, and he's not there. Where is he? You know, it's a long
escape.
Pit stop.
That's what I see him, the steak escape.
Yeah, or maybe the Sbarro pizza or whatever, however you pronounce that. Is that a silent S or is it actually your start with a B? How do you pronounce that?
I don't know. I can't say I've ever eaten there.
Yeah. Okay.
Sbarro.
We can ask. We can ask Wolf next time he's here.
Exactly. For a food review. He'll go to the network on us.
Detroit. Detroit was the team that had the swing in 1968.
I see. That's nice.
There it is.
Lost to Dallas. Beat Chicago, actually.
That's called tying up all loose ends.
Yeah, that's right.
In this edition.
Putting it's a callback in writing.
Exactly. Yeah. So now he doesn't have to answer all the messages and the posts on the blog. So there you go. For Darren Urban, Damian Anderson, Jim Omahunter, I'm Paul Calvisi. All brought to you here on Cardinals Underground by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram, on easycardinals.com.
And Santa put gifts under Christmas trees. Decorate the house with lights at night. Snow's on the ground, Snow White so bright. In the fireplace is the Yule log. Beneath the mistletoe as we drink eggnog.